ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। सो रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 5 चैप्टर 14 टेक्स्ट नंबर 33। So I'll just read through and then we can do the word for word. There's a bit of echo, if it can be adjusted, it would be nice. Evam adhyavan, evam adhvani, avarudhanau, mrityo gaja bhayat, Tamasi divi kandare praye. So we'll do the synonyms together. Evam, in this way. Advani, on the path of sense gratification. Avarodhanaha, being confined. He forgets the real purpose of life. Mrityu gaja bhayat, out of fear of the elephant of death. Tamasi, in the darkness. Giri kandara praye, similar to the dark caves in the mountains. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki translation. In this material world, when the conditioned soul forgets his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and does not care for Krishna consciousness, he simply engages in different types of mysterious and sinful activities. He is then subjected to the threefold miseries and, out of fear of the elephant of death, he falls into the darkness found in a mountain cave. So let's just try to repeat this. It's a very poetic translation here today, Prabhupada. So please repeat. In this material world, when the conditioned soul forgets his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and does not care for Krishna consciousness, he simply engages in different types of mysterious and sinful activities. What are the two kinds of activities? Mysterious and sinful. He is then subjected to the threefold miseries, and out of fear of the elephant of death, he falls into the darkness found in a mountain cave. Let's see what Prabhupada put in the purport. Purport, Srila Prabhupada. Everyone is afraid of death. Is that true? I think so. Everyone is afraid of death. And however strong a materialistic person may be, when there is disease and old age, one must certainly accept death's notice. The conditioned soul becomes very morose to receive notice of death, his fear is compared to the fear experienced upon entering a dark mountain cave, and death is compared to a great elephant. Om jnana timirandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurunmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manovistam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam tadati svapadantikam vandeham shri guru shivata padakamalam shri gurum vaishyavanamasta shri rupam sagrajatam sahaganaratanatam tamtam sativam sadvaitam sarvadutam parijana sahitam krishna chaitanya devam shri radha krishna padam sahaganalita shri vishakamasta namo vishnu padaya krishna prasthaya bhutale srimade bhakti vedanta swami iti namine namaste saraswati deve gauravani pracharine nirvishesha sudivani pasyacha desatarine vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhubhyeva cha patitanam pavinebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah jai sri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So before we start, I'd like to humbly ask the blessings of everyone so that when we speak something to glorify the Srimad Bhagavatam. How many of you have heard of some wonderful event that happened within the last 2 days? Something in the media? Yeah? A little louder? Something in the media that I think Srila Prabhupada would be very happy about. Yeah. No, no. Srila Prabhupada would be happy about this. Yes? Yes, the National Book of India is proposed to be Srimad Bhagavad Gita. So, this is really wonderful news, and I think Srila Prabhupada, for all his hard efforts in trying to spread the glories of Bhagavad Gita, would be so happy about this. So it's only becoming so. Any idea how many Bhagavad Gitas has been distributed so far? Only Bhagavad Gitas, how many? 110 million. Srila Prabhupada. So 110 million Bhagavad Gitas. Actually, that number is so big, but in Vedic time, we even have a name to describe such a number. It's called Adbhutana. I hope I'm saying it right. It's described in the Priyavrata Leela, in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam. We hear this description of him ruling the world for so many years. And it's described like this, 110 million. So this is like 100 crore or so. It's a huge figure. So can you imagine how many people have Bhagavad Gita? And Prabhupada described these as time bombs. It's just a matter of time before it explodes. So he'll be very happy with such an achievement. And we can see, as people, as bad as things look from the external perspective of the influence of Kali, there's also the great achievements of the sadhus who are trying to counter this by the expounding of Vedic knowledge, by their own personal practice, by their own sadhana. They are changing the vibration of the planet. It's a whole planet is actually changing due to this. So Srimad Bhagavatam is a conclusive philosophy. It's Krishna's last message to humanity before he left this planet. So it's conclusive philosophy. It's everything he wanted to say. He spoke to Arjuna, but in 700 verses, how much can you say? Of that, Krishna spoke 575 verses. So to condense the whole Vedic gamut in just 575 verses, for us to understand it, it's not a problem for Krishna to speak it, but for us to understand the essential principles, it need a little more than that. And Krishna does expound further. In the 11th canto, he also speaks the Uddhav Gita, which is a huge, almost 1,000 verses there. So it's a huge volume of information that Krishna is wanting to share, so that we can extract the principles of life in order to understand how to deal with activities of life and how to deal with this crucial moment, that time when we have to leave this material body. Yoga is a very subtle science, and it's the science of understanding this practice of how to live within this world harmoniously with nature, and at all times trying to keep right in the forefront of one's mind that moment could be any time. Like we unfortunately heard this morning's announcement of this devotee who is critically injured from Malaysia. So when he started his morning's activities, he did not think that something like this is going to happen. So who knows? Today may be our day. Who knows? So it's not in our hands to figure that one out, but it is in our hands to remember Krishna. So that practice devotees are constantly trying to cultivate by attire, by devotional clothes, and by practice, achara, by one's activities. So Krishna mentions in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, text 2, idam jnanam upasritya, that this knowledge is to take, this knowledge is to be taken shelter of. That it's not only knowledge, jnanam vijnanam astakyam, it's not only to acquire knowledge, but one should take shelter of this knowledge. That means it's a practical application. Otherwise, it doesn't become part of your character. It becomes part of your database, which is stored in the mind. But we want to be the living Bhagavat. We will be practicing, we're hearing about Bhagavatam, two times of Bhagavatam, the book Bhagavatam and the person Bhagavatam. So the person Bhagavatam becomes so because he applies the knowledge of the book Bhagavatam. So we want to guide our lives in this way. So in this chapter, we can see the reality of the conditioned soul in his attempts to enjoy material life. He is striving, he is struggling, he is endeavoring like anything. We heard so graphic descriptions. Actually, if you do the Bhakti Vaibhav course, then the description that is given of this chapter says that there are 30 different analogies given in this chapter. Metaphors, different descriptions of, in, like we heard some of it today. What is the two we heard today? Anybody remember? Yes, the elephant of death and the dark cave in the mountain. So as much as these are descriptions of poetic, this poetic kind of way, but it's also a deep principle of philosophy that comes out in this. So if one wants to enjoy separate from Krishna, then Rupa Goswami gives very crucial advice. Don't go there to Keshigat, which means don't go to Roy Bazaar. It's nearby. Don't go to Keshigat if you still want to enjoy, because there's this beautiful person who's playing on the flute, and his name is Govinda. And he will completely enchant your mind. So if you still want to enjoy separately, don't go there. So Rupa Goswami's advice. So if Srimad Bhagavatam, like one may say, well, is it just a story then, because we're hearing these different descriptions? So the Acharyas describe to us that if this was just a story, then the Srimad Bhagavatam, as is described, if it was just a story, then it would be, it's fiction, right, which is a story. But if it was just a story which is illusionary, then how can something illusionary take you out of illusion? If it was illusionary, by practicing and reading about this, how can it take us out of illusion, which it is doing? Then it can't be just a story. There must be some deeper aspect to this. So it's character developing. It's deeper than just fiction. Actually, it's described in literature as transfictional, non-fictional literature, which is technically called, but it's basically spiritual literature, trans-non-fictional literature. It's beyond the normal realm of fiction. So Prabhupada starts very interestingly in the translation. Let's try to read through the translation and see what... It's a relatively short purport, but it has tremendous density. It has a huge amount of weight and wealth that if we can try to extract, can help us in our practice of devotional service today. So Prabhupada starts in the translation. In this material world, when the conditioned soul forgets his relationship with Krishna, Krishna bholiya ji bhogavancha kare maya shane thare jhapatiya thare. When one forgets his relationship with Krishna, maya is waiting there, jhapatiya thare, to just pounce on one. Pounce on one. Chapati sounds strong, huh? Just to pounce on one. So the living entity is trying in his attempt. What he doesn't realize is that actually what he's looking for is Krishna. He has some experience of joy, of happiness, of fulfillment, of being satisfied. But when he comes into the material realm, the soul is uncomfortable here, because firstly, he has to interact in this world through the interface of the human body, if he's lucky to get it. So using this as the instrument, he tries to interrelate with matter and trying to extract enjoyment, which he knows about, which he's experienced, out of matter, which is dead. Jai Sri Sri Radhe Shyam Krishna Balaram Gaur Nitai Sri Prabhupada Ki Jai. And which is dead. So it can't really satisfy his desire for experiencing this. And in his attempt to try to live with unsatisfied desires, he becomes disturbed. Because you have a desire but you can't satisfy it. And he's the only way he can relate to anything here is through the body. So therefore you get different situations of neurosis, psychosis, different types of mental disorders. Because the desires are there and it's not fulfilled. It creates, mental energy which is negative in the mind and in the heart. And it starts to disturb. Even Ayurveda says that disease comes first from the mental platform. So if one understands that it's actually happening like this due to his unfulfilled desire, due to his actual search for Krishna. He needs to find Krishna. So we see in life, this is the position we want to find ourselves. Trying to meditate, trying to keep Krishna in the mind and in the heart. Maya shakta manapartha yogam yunjan matashraya ashamshaya samagrama yata gyasnasi takshuno. Just here, Arjuna, Just hear from me. By first engaging your mind in thinking about me. So in order to actually experience enjoyment or satisfaction, we have to first engage the mind. That's the level we want to try to come to. So in spiritual life, gives us that opportunity to engage the mind in proper cultivation, something to repose it into a paradigm that is of permanence. Because the current paradigm is not permanent, it's temporary. But the spiritual world is. So by engaging the mind, mantra, into that realm, one develops stability in one's life and satisfaction in the heart. So this comes by association. So association has to be consciously applied. It has to be it's a systematic process. So we get association, but if it's not applied, what did you take from that association or that person? So taking something is an application. And if we don't apply this just like that, then these will just be stories. Bhagavatam will, although there's a certain level of purification, because it's absolute, but it can do more than that. So if we are aware of this and try to apply it in that way, we can reach deeper levels of fulfillment within our spiritual practice. So first we start by hearing. So it evolves from there to devotee association. So we start to hear. Actually, even coming to Krishna consciousness, we first started by hearing a devotee. Somebody told us about Krishna. So starting from there, and then by our own application of it, it starts with Shravanam. And by practicing Shravanam, Kirtanam, then we are developing these finer, refined qualities of spiritual practice. So even a self-realized soul, one may say, well, what if we don't have association? What if we don't have that proper association? But even somebody who's highly self-realized, he's also associating. He's associating with Krishna. In his heart and in his mind, he's associating with Krishna. So it seems to be a constant practice right through our spiritual, both in Vaidhi and Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti. And even in the perfected stage, we will also be constantly remembering by hearing about Krishna. Actually, every day in Vrindavan, towards the evening, everybody wants to hear, what did Krishna do for that day? So these two personalities, Snigdha Kanta and Madhu Kanta, they relate the pastimes of Krishna, and everybody is wrapped in attention. Which demons did he kill? What activities did he do? They completely absorbed in hearing about Krishna. And therefore their remembrance becomes deeper. When we remember Krishna, this is called Smaranam. It's our active process in trying to remember Krishna. And when he remembers us, that is called Skurti. It's his connection with us. So when he's remembering us, he's also remembering us. And he gives us a glimpse of himself. So it's both ways, because it's a relationship. It's a dynamic. It's a devotional service. Devotion is a dynamic. It's two-way. It's not like the roads in India. One way, sometimes there's no way, sometimes multiple way. But Krishna's process is two-way. He's reciprocal with us. So it comes by association. So when we hear Krishna, when we hear about Krishna, we don't want to just do it in a passive way. We don't want to be a passive listener. We want to be an active listener. Because at the end of whatever we hear, we have to ask ourselves, what can I apply to my life today? Because by the grace of Krishna, I've heard this today. And hearing, just, you may have heard it many times, but today it has become impressionable to you. So when we hear something, we want to remember that, how can I apply this actively today to increase my process in my sadhana today to Krishna. So then, yes. So Prabhupada describes the mind and how it disturbs and deviates us in a very beautiful adjective. Maybe some of you have heard it. It's called recalcitrant. A recalcitrant mind. So the mind is the obstacle that is preventing us from trying to get closer to Krishna. And that is what we will have to traverse at the time of death also. Because when the body is going in reverse, everything is shutting down, like we're going to see just now. I'm going to show you something just now. When everything is shutting down, it's the mind then that we can still use if we trained it enough. But in the state that it is now, it's usually, as Prabhupada would describe, it's recalcitrant. Recalcitrant means when one disobeys a higher authority. So the mind, if it's not trained, becomes like this and gives us a lot of difficulty. So by constant practice and detachment, one is able to overpower, cultivate this devotional disposition towards the mind and Krishna. So Prabhupada was glorified by Bhaktisiddhanta Prabhupada that he likes to hear. He likes to hear. So hearing is this powerful form. And we know the sadhus, although they have left the material world, they live in sound. So if we cultivate this devotional disposition towards sadhana, towards Krishna, then using the principle of hearing, we can actually revive our Krishna consciousness very, very quickly. So this association, Prabhupada tells one very funny story. Sometimes some of Prabhupada's stories are a little strong, and this is one particular one. Prabhupada was mentioning that somebody had gone to the bathroom to do his, gone to the toilet to do his business. And after he finished, he turned around and what did he see? Yeah, he saw that, right, which was there. And the stool started to talk to him. And he was so surprised. And he says, oof, what is that bad smell here? And the stool started to talk to him. So Prabhupada is narrating this story. And then the stool said, oh, you think it's a bad smell, huh? Just yesterday I was a pakoda. But after associating with you, look what am I today. So Prabhupada would use his graphic stories to make us understand association and the power of association. So the interface of the human body is a very rare thing because it's the only form that can actually understand itself and the 8.4 million species of life. By examining the external world through pratyaksha, direct sense perception, and induction, by reasoning it, one can actually have a deeper insight into what am I doing here? How am I actually wanting to be enjoying this material world? So it gives us insight. Prabhupada then continues with the translation. He says here, with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and does not care for Krishna consciousness. So again, we're remembering the suffering condition of the material, of the conditioned soul. Condition means, Prabhupada described, condition means seeing from my bodily concept, from the bodily concept of life. So one can actually have a body, but if it's engaged in Krishna's service, he can actually transcend it. So there's two principles acting here. For enjoyment, there's two principles. One is karma and the other is karma. So one is acting, karma, and karma, his desires. He's trying to fulfill that. And you'll be glad to know that both of these can be purified in Krishna consciousness. This is what yoga is trying to do. Purify oneself to reach the higher realm. Though it's not easy, but it is possible. So Prabhupada goes on to say, he simply engages in different types of mischievous and sinful activities. So two things are described here. mysterious and sinful activities. So he's wasting time by doing mysterious activities. We're very familiar with this because the way the world is going at the moment, we use most of our time in a virtual paradigm. We are completely focused on a mobile or a computer, and we're connecting to people through Facebook and different things like that. These things are not bad if they understood how to be used. But if you constantly, in every free moment you have, they say somebody looks at their mobile phone every 30 seconds. Every 30 seconds, somebody takes out the mobile phone. And the other day I was in the metro in Delhi, and I saw this as a fact. I saw people, now they're standing, and then you just take out your mobile, check quickly, okay. In another few seconds, you take out the mobile, twice a minute. So if that is reality to you, you're living in a virtual reality. It's totally artificial. You have no deeper connection to your real self. And that is not what spiritual life is teaching us. So as much as we use these things, we want to actually transcend them. We just want to use them in connection to Krishna. Anashaktascha vishaya yatatam upayunjitam nirbandha krishna sambandha ayukta vairagya uchate. We want to use it in service of Krishna discriminately, because remember, these things are coming with a lot of ugra karma, and we are not free from their influence. We can easily be covered over. We don't want to be come to this far in devotional service and fall victim to some device as the reality of life. It would be sad. So the paradox is, in enjoyment, is that the senses give us the perception on, hold on, I wrote it out here. That senses give us perception that take us away into illusion, right? When we analyze the world, the senses, if we get persuaded by what we see, pull us to illusion. But the same senses force us to look for pleasure within also. That same senses can actually force us to actually look for the spiritual nature, although it is material. Just like we use our senses, Rishikesha Rishikena, in Krishna's service. So something which is beyond the illusionary world, these senses are actually pushing us constantly. I need that, I want that, I want to enjoy that. Now, although they in themselves are not bad, but in the activity that they pull us to do under a conditioned state, it forces us to enjoy material nature. But those same senses, because they are not satisfied, they provide the impetus for spiritual life. Therefore, we should be thankful to them. Because they are not satisfied, they're providing the impetus for spiritual life. I want something more. I want something deeper. And they force us to go within for enjoyment. It's a very deep principle. You think about that one. So the mind is repeatedly betraying us, but we still believe it. The mind constantly says, no, you just didn't do it right this time. That's all. It just didn't do it right. If you try it this way, you probably will get it. Or if you try it that way, then you just didn't do it right. So the mind constantly betrays us. And did you ever forsake your mind? But Krishna has constantly tried to help us. But how many times have we forsaken His advice over the mind? So constantly the mind prods us, and still, even up to now, I still listen to my mind. And yet Krishna, patiently but perseverantly, He constantly tries to encourage us, and yet we don't give Him a second hear. Oh yeah, I heard about that, doesn't work. But when the mind says something, oh, you just didn't do it right, let me try it this way the next time. So we don't want to be pulled into that dichotomy of delusion. Because the mind is empowered to do that in a conditioned state, move towards negativity. So we don't want to be in that kind of a situation. Prabhupada goes on to say here, he is then subjected to the threefold miseries of material nature. He is not free. There are three doers as described in Bhagavad Gita. Two of them are neutral, Ishvara and Prakriti, and the third doer is not neutral. Why? Because he is the chooser. He has choice. So if he has choice, then he is accountable for his actions, and he doesn't want to be, because he wants to be independent, and therefore he falls into the cycle again. So Prabhupada is describing about old age. So this is not a very pleasant picture, but it's the reality of life. Don't worry, all of us will be there one day. Don't be worried, we'll get there. But yet you see, just like Vidura was telling Dhritarashtra, giving him a whole medical report, that your liver is finished and your teeth have fallen out and you can't digest anymore, and you still want to be attached to the body. So the reality of life is that the material body is actually not designed to give enjoyment. It gives some enjoyment, but it's not designed for enjoyment. If you look at it, it actually provides more pain in ratio to the enjoyment. And most of the time, the enjoyment is just in the mind. When it comes down to the reality, you're not satisfied, I'm not satisfied. So, it's... if you consider like your liver, how much of enjoyment can your liver give you? How much of enjoyment can your kidneys give you? But how much of pain can your kidneys give you if you have a stone in it? Your spine, how much of enjoyment can your spine give you? But if you have a slip disc, how much of pain can it give you? So if we see, the body seems to be designed by nature to more in the direction of pain than pleasure. Now it's not, we're not promoting a sadist kind of worldview, but we say be objective, be thoughtful. Because if the apparatus itself doesn't have the built-in device to offer you pleasure, don't try to exert it. We keep exerting the senses to give us pleasure. And it can only, it only has a certain capacity. If you override that capacity, it's on overdrive. And anything which is exerted can only last a certain amount of time. So Prabhupada then goes on. He says here, and out of fear of the elephant of death, he falls into the darkness found in a mountain cave. So this elephant of death is a very interesting thing. I come from the country where the African elephant, the biggest land animal, walks the earth. And I can tell you, it is not a small creature. It's gigantic. For those of you who travel internationally, you would see in the Indira Gandhi Airport, Terminal 1, the departure lounge. How many of you have seen those elephants there, that huge, you've seen that huge elephant and the baby elephant. So try, next time you're flying out, try to stand near it and have an experience of what it would be like if that animal really came alive. What would you do if you're standing up front next to an elephant, close up like that? So, just to give us a vivid experience of this, I have a few second experience of this which I like to share with you. So, I'm just going to set this quickly. And okay, this is here. I always like visuals, forgive me. Okay, I'm getting feedback. Okay. just going to hold it up a little bit so you can see it. I don't know if you're going to see it from the back, but you can see. This is an elephant charging. Okay, this is a second one also. Can you imagine confronting
this? Something else, but you just never brought. Just taking some breath. And he's not one of them whatsoever. Just taking some breath. What I'll do is imagine a mock charge. Right, sorry. He's going to do some mock charge. Second time. You won't be so lucky.
You should only do so making sure you have an escape route and your shoelaces obviously tight. Giving yourself a distance of at least 50 to 100 metres should be in most cases a good approaching range. Pushing my luck with this big guy, I tried to sneak up behind him to see how close I could get. And obviously suddenly he reacted, pushing his way through the grass, trumpeting, making himself look as big as he can. And I'll tell you what, seeing something like that, only one that makes you run as quick as Roadrunner.
So can you imagine meeting that face to face? What would that be like? That would be really something very amazing. I doubt you'll come out of that. So that person was quite daring there, but you can. There's a real lot of echo if we can. Okay. Sorry about that. So can you imagine what it'd be to meet that face to face? So that guy was a little daring there, but still, at least you have an experience of what it would be like to actually meet an elephant. And that's described here in today's verse as death. Prabhupada goes on here now. He starts a purport. It's a short purport, so Prabhupada describes it here. Everyone is afraid of death. So is this an absolute, that everyone is afraid of death? I guess so. Anybody who's sane would actually try to figure out, you know, how can I, even this is what the scientists are trying to do, how to overcome this moment of death. So everybody is afraid of death. But if you think about it really, the body is already dead. But now the soul is gone away. So the body is always dead. It's never been alive. It's the soul that animates the body. Prabhupada goes on to say, and however strong a materialistic person may be, when there is disease and old age, one must certainly accept death's notice. So it's not, it's like an ultimatum that comes when one is old and diseased, and nobody wants to be in that state. So it's not a very comfortable state to be in, old, diseased, like we showed you the picture. But if you ask a materialistic person, how are you today, my sir? And what does he say? I'm fine. Everything is theek hai. Everything is, Nobody would like to admit that it's not. And a materialistic person is usually absorbed in one of these four activities that Prabhupada has described in Bhagavad Gita also. Eating, sleeping, mating and defending. So if one is absorbed in these activities, forgetting spiritual activity, this is what he would become in the corresponding life. So one doesn't want to be caught up in that way. And the other thing that we've been hearing about recently is money. A materialist is super attached to money. Now, the value of money in itself is actually it's just paper. And due to inflation, it loses its value. They say 3% of money in the world is actually governmental authorized money. The rest of it is made by private banks. 3%. 97% is made by private banks without offering the equivalent amount of gold. So we caught up in a loop of compound interest. that we just can never be able to pay back. And this is an example of it. It's a little far for you to see, but this is a note, a money note of $500 million. So guess what dollars is it? Zimbabwean dollars. It's of course not US dollars. So can you imagine a note, one note of 500 million? One note. Here's a better one. Because of the crisis of that country, the government was issuing out checks for farmers, which is equivalent of money, right? This was a note of $100 billion. $100 billion. I don't think that country even has that amount of money. $100 billion. So can you imagine now, for materialistic people, that is like the essential aspect of life. Money is the honey, like we've been hearing. So Prabhupada very nicely describes this in a beautiful story. If the sound works out for us, we're going to try to hear it directly from Prabhupada himself. So try to hear.
The Supreme Complete. When your time will be complete, no more sharing this body. Nobody can check. The arrangement is so strong.
The arrangement is so strong. Nobody can check it. When your time is to come, nobody can check it.
You cannot say, let me remain. Actually, it happens.
Cannot say, let me remain. Now Prabhupada tells a story of, like he said in the purport, he's going to tell the quick story.
When I was in India, Allahabad, one of our known friends, he is a very rich man. So he was dying.
So a very rich man, a friend of Prabhupada's, was dying.
So he was requesting the doctor. Give me at least 4 years to live. I've got some plan. I could not finish.
So he wanted 4 years more to live.
This is demonic. Everyone thinks that, oh, I have to do this. No. The doctors are doctors, father, sorry, father, no scientist can check.
You can be who you are, doctor, doctor's father, the scientist, everyone. Prabhupada says, nobody can check this death. Sarvascha aham. How does that go? Mityo haras sarvascha. Yes.
No, 4 years, not even 4 minutes.
No, 4 months, not even 4 minutes, Prabhupada said.
You have to go in. This is law. So, before that moment comes, one should be very desperate to realize Krishna consciousness. Purnam jateta. Purnam means very swiftly, very quickly, you should realize.
So you should finish your business before the next death comes. So it's already 9, so I want to show you something very, very powerful. In the scientific world, they're trying to understand this concept of consciousness and consciousness acting out of being separate from the body, just like Prabhupada has taught us in Bhagavad Gita. So I have some interest in science and spirituality. So when we're meeting to people over all these years now, to the people that we were trying to cultivate and speak to who are in this kind of field, they're finally admitting that actually what your Swamiji had spoken earlier on in the Bhagavad Gita, in 1966, what Srila Prabhupada started preaching about, you're not this body, you're the soul, The soul has consciousness which animates the body. At that time, in 1966, it was taken in good faith as bona fide, but we didn't have experiments to do that. Now with the technology of science and people in this field, they've actually developed techniques to show that there's actual consciousness existing even after the body has passed on. So I'd just like to share this with you quickly so that you can have an experience that what Prabhupada has taught us is actually absolute. If we can try to appreciate this as a foundation of our spiritual life, if these things are becoming true right now in the world of science, can you imagine in 10 years, in 100 years? And this is going to go for 10,000 years. So this can help us to solidify our foundation in Krishna consciousness. So
scientists.
Okay, there we go.
Have proof that there is life after death. Well, sort of. What they have discovered is that consciousness may continue even after death. Now, this is a subject that's been treated with a lot of skepticism over the years, but in a most extensive study of its kind, scientists at the University of Southampton in the UK have spent nearly 4 years examining more than 2,000 people who suffered cardiac arrests at 15 hospitals in the UK, the US, and Austria, and have found that 40% of people who recovered described having some form of awareness at the time when they were declared clinically dead. Now, as I said, Mark, the perception is, or the current wisdom is, that death occurs about 20 to 30 seconds after your heart stops beating. And the research indicates that it goes on for significantly longer than that. And this is what the sort of top line takeaway from the report is. Quote, "The evidence thus far suggests that in the first few minutes after death, consciousness is not annihilated. Whether it fades away afterwards, we do not know. But right after death, consciousness is not lost." So this is coming, they got this, as I said, you have to kind of take a little bit of a leap of faith here. But it was conducted by prominent scientists in a sensible, you know, studied fashion. It wasn't just, you know, it is anecdotal, but it was done in a conscientious fashion.
Whenever there's a study like this, doubters will jump on and say, well, that's just because your lack of oxygen and you're hallucinating and all this, and people will kind of poo-poo it. But this is putting together a large amount of experiential evidence from people who describe the events as well.
And they describe the events in great detail. So one of the, and we're just going to quote this one particular 57-year-old man who suffered a cardiac arrest and was able to, and he was dead. He was clinically dead. He was on the slab and they were trying to revive him with a defibrillator. And he, well, I'll read you his account, what he says. He says, it's long, but if you listen to it, it'll make sense. "We know the brain can't function when the heart has stopped beating. But in this case, conscious awareness appears to have continued for up to 3 minutes. The man described everything that had happened in the room. But importantly, he heard two bleeps from a machine that makes a noise at 3 minute intervals, so he could time how long the experience lasted for. He seemed very credible, and everything that he said had happened to him had actually happened." So he was able to describe in detail what people were trying to do. Now,
so that gives us an idea that how do that person still be able to describe if he's clinically dead? By medical terms, he's completely dead. So how can he describe something then? There's no brain activity or anything. There's no heartbeat. So how did this person hear this beats after 3 minutes? So Krishna explained this right in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. Avinasi tu tad vidhi yena sarvam idam tatam. That which pervades entire body is consciousness, and that is coming from the soul. So there's a last one before we... This is the last one.
"I'm an ICU physician. We take care of critically ill patients. These are the sickest patients in the hospital. And to some degree, some of these patients are so sick they're beyond our medical care, and they pass away. We try very, very hard to make sure our patients die pain-free. That generally means that we give them an adequate amount of pain medication. In order to make sure that our patients are comfortable, we often use an EEG monitor that helps us know what the level of consciousness for our patients. As the patient approaches death, the level of consciousness as measured by these EEG devices goes down to very low levels and then eventually goes to zero.
So when it beeps, it means a person is dead. But watch what happens on the monitor now.
They're no longer breathing. And this is essentially a patient who has now passed away.
So what's the monitor?
After they die.